Welcome to Open Line. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Fred Anderle today. It's amazing what $4 a gallon gasoline can do. It's forcing us to consolidate trips and take the small car on vacation, even if we go on vacation. We surf eBay looking for good deals on used Chevy Geos. We buy gift cards to the home improvement store at a grocery store so we can buy that grocery store's gasoline at a discount. We walk more, we bike more, we're taking the bus more. Ridership on Central Ohio Transit Authority buses is up about 8% over last year. $4 a gallon gasoline has reignited the conversation about mass transit. And this hour, we'll talk buses and trains and other ways to get people around with our three guests. Chester Jordan, who directs MORPC, the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. Welcome, Chester.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Great. Thanks for being with us. Bill Loda, who runs CODA, the Central Ohio Transit Authority. Bill, welcome.
Morning, Mike. Thank you.
Good morning. And City Council member Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy. Mary Ellen, welcome.
Nice to be here, Mike.
Did you ride your bike today?
I sure did.
All right. So you're a bike mass transitor.
Well, I'm an advocate of all alternative forms.
Great.
Balanced transportation.
Okay. Bill, let's start with you. After years of declining ridership and service cutbacks, you face an interesting problem. And some of your routes, you don't have enough buses. It's a problem you're probably welcome or glad to be having to deal with.
Well, it is an issue. I don't want to say a problem, but it's a challenge.
Yeah.
And you're right, Mike. Ridership in Central Ohio has declined over the last few years, primarily because we had to cut service in 06 to balance our budget. The voters entrusted us with additional funds in November of 06, which we started collecting in April 08. So we are expanding service. At the same time, and fortunately for Central Ohio, we are able to expand service. Some authorities around Ohio actually are faced with cutting service. But with the escalating gas prices, our ridership is up significantly. As you said, last week, on a rolling 12-month basis, it's up 8.1%. And week over week, it's up over 14.5%. And we are experiencing, unfortunately, situations where we have to pass up customers on our big routes.
The buses are too crowded. They're too full.
But buses are full, and it becomes a safety issue. People who board a bus will see a white line just behind the operator, and the operator is not to permit customers to stand in front of that line from a safety perspective. So the only alternative is to pass up, and it's happening all too frequently on the High Street, North High Street, the Cleveland Avenue, the Main Street, the Livingston, East and West Broad, and we're now starting to see our express buses reach capacity.
Chester, you must be getting more and more inquiries about mass transit and ride-sharing programs and things like that because of the high cost of gas.
Well, we are, Mike, and we've seen exponential growth in our van pools ride-sharing program at a rate we've never seen before in our history. We know we run about 80-something vans now throughout Central Ohio. That's continuing to grow, not only van pools but also interest in carpooling. Zip cars at OSU and the use of zip cars and rental car, but also the huge growth we've seen in interest in biking. Not only was it not there previously, we had biking interest, but that's also grown. One of the challenges we have on the CODA bus service is individuals that bike and also want to ride the bus. Mm-hmm. We don't have any places to put those bikes now.
Yeah.
And so that's also a challenge for us. So with the higher gas prices, it's gotten folks to really think about, what are my options? What can I do? And unfortunately for Central Ohio, we're limited. And what we've got to talk about is, what do we do about it in the future? How can we make sure we provide the transportation options for our kids and grandkids so in 20 years from now, they will have those options that we don't have today?
Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy, from a public policy perspective, a government perspective, what has these high gas prices meant to you and members of the City Council to try to push these types of programs?
Right. It's important to point out here that I think that people are – basically stunned and confused and have some feeling that somehow we're going to, the government is going to be able to get gas down to $2 or under $2 a gallon so they can continue to live the lives that are so car-centric. But I believe in the future, our government, certainly at the local level and really at all levels, what do we have control of? We we have very little control of our ability to get more oil. And as a matter of fact, our ability as a country and as the world is going to, you know, our ability to get oil is going to continue to decrease. It's going to be more difficult to get. So what can the government do? The government can offer people transportation alternatives. That's what we need to do. The government can help support alternatives to the car. We've built a tremendous roadway system in the last 50 years, and we've neglected transit systems, which I believe are an essential infrastructure element that we need to invest in as a government. We also need to make sure that we're building out bikeways, complete streets. As you know, I'm a big advocate of making sure that every street supports pedestrians, cars, and transit, mm-hmm. and bikes.
Okay. Our phone number, if you'd like to take part in this conversation, is 292-8513, 292-8513. We also welcome your emails at openline@wosu.org. We're talking mass transit this day with Chester Jordan, the director of MORPC, Bill Loda, the director of the Central Ohio Transit Authority, and City Council member Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy. Back to the buses. Bill, is an 8% increase in ridership enough over the last, you know, year or so? Is that enough for you to make the investment needed to expand service over the long term?
Well, yes, Mike. We have planned and are expanding service. Let me just follow up on something Chester said. I mean, I just want just to clarify. I'm not sure what Chester.
Sure.
Was alluding to, so I apologize if I misconstrue this, but all COTA buses are equipped with bike racks on the front of the bus, and we encourage people to use the bike racks. In fact, it's one of the most successful programs we've had. I think it was several months ago we passed our 100,000th bike since we instituted that. But when we went to the voters in 2006, we developed a long-range transit plan where we would grow our system about 60,000 hours every year, and that's about 10% expansion. We began that even before we started collecting our money, and in fact, in September, we will be adding part of the 20,000 hours annualized to meet that 60,000 goal. So, yes, we are expanding service. Where we found the challenge is that because of the high gas price and the significant increase in ridership, we're directing more of our resources in the short run to adding local routes to handle the crowding, adding additional express routes to handle the crowding as well. But, yes, we are expanding service. We're looking at going to places we don't go and trying to meet the needs of Central Ohio. As Councilwoman O'Shaughnessy said, we've got to provide options to people who are being stressed as a result of the high gas prices.
For taking the bus, it's convenience versus the cost. You have your car and you're driving to work, and maybe it's 10 miles each way to work. So $4 a gallon gas, you're getting 25 miles to the gallon. You take that cost versus the cost of getting to the bus stop ahead of time, having to leave work at a certain time. So the way to overcome that is more routes, more buses, and more different routes.
Yeah, I would challenge the blanket statement that it's more convenient to take a car. We have situations, particularly at our park and rides, and I'm sure we have some of these on our local routes as well, where customers find it's actually quicker to get from their home to their office by utilizing the bus, because we now have what we call some no-stress expresses where they board the bus at the park and ride. The bus goes directly to the freeway, comes down where it may have gone to the north terminal or the south terminal, and they had to walk. It now goes down High Street. I was riding the bus the other day with a customer who rides out of our Westerville park and ride. And he can get to his office in One Columbus quicker on the bus than he can on his car because he's got to park somewhere remote, walk to the office. So the bus is not many times as convenient, sometimes more convenient. Now, I will also say there are situations where people have to take two buses.
That's the thing. If you have to transfer, then it can extend your trip.
No question about it, Mike. There are times where the bus is not as convenient as the car. But you got to balance the cost of gas, the cost of parking, the wear and tear on the car. Can you read the paper? Can you read a book on the bus? So it's trade-offs.
And with wireless technology, you can do your work on the bus with a BlackBerry or with a laptop computer. 292-8513, 292-8513, or you can email us at openline@wosu.org. One more question on the bus. Bill, your fuel costs are rising as well, and you have to keep up with that. I mean, you're using diesel fuel, and how are you coping with the rising fuel costs yourself?
It is a real challenge, Mike. We're faced, just like the individuals, with rising fuel costs. We currently, in fact, I just checked before I came here this morning, we're currently paying $4.09 a gallon for diesel fuel. Now, that's less tax, so you to comparable what you see at the pump, you'd have to add tax into there. That is now our second largest expense behind payroll and benefits, and we are paying millions of dollars more a year in diesel fuel than what we historically have.
Fare increase, is that anything that you'll have to do to help meet those rising costs?
We constantly have to monitor that, Mike. Right now, we have no active discussions, but in our long-range transit plan, we did put in periodic fare increases into the future. We will continuously monitor that. Many transit authorities across the state are doing that. In fact, just last week, Cleveland announced they're going to propose a 50-cent fuel surcharge with a 3% cut in service. And it's unfortunate to cut service in face of the tremendous increasing demand.
Just when people are starting to find where those bus stops are close to their home and see how many people are there. I mean, I see more and more people waiting at the bus stop on my way into work, and I have to note that I note where the bus stops are and which numbers go close to my work and things like that. So people are starting to at least consider it. Haven't made the leap yet, but we're considering it.
If I could put in a plug, and in fact, I think it's up and running. If it's not, it'll be very shortly. We just instituted Google Transit, and it is a phenomenal system.
Is it up and running?
Well, I should have checked, but I didn't. But we were supposed to be up July 3rd.
Oh, then I have to check it out.
But I would encourage people to go to coda.com and try Google Transit.
You can type in your beginning point, end point, and it'll tell you how to get there.
It will tell you how far you have to walk to the bus stop, how far you have to walk from your terminal point to your ultimate destination, and you can go on Google Maps and see where you're going.
Okay.
Mike, as great as bus service is, but we've got to think about an integrated system.
Yes.
I think that's really where we have to get to, because a lot of times we have folks who are living in outlying communities that work in Columbus or work in Rickenbacker or work in at Honda Plant up in Marysville. We have to think about how do we make sure we're providing a connected system throughout the region. So it's coded bus service, it's van pools, it's ride sharing, it's carpools, it's biking. It's an integrated system. It's pedestrian. It's walking. All that has to be part of the system. And so instead of thinking about these things in a vacuum or in boxes, we have to think, well, what is the vision for Central Ohio?
Right.
What is the transportation system we want today, tomorrow, and the tomorrows after that? And then we have to build it.
And what we need is a system. We love the buses, don't get me wrong, but understand, Bill just came down a couple weeks ago and continuing the conversation about mass transportation in Central Ohio. And we've only got 52, 53 routes, is that right, Bill? 53 routes, and we've got a region of 1.1 million people and growing. And COTA finds itself in a situation where it's desperately trying to play catch-up, and it is a single mode, that just the bus. What we need is to make sure that we're putting the proper mass transportation mode in the proper areas, which is why I support beginning the streetcar line down High Street. As Chester alluded to, we can see in the future, a regional light rail system that would feed into streetcars and buses. A big city of this size really needs this. We're woefully behind the times. And as we were walking down here, we were talking about the fact that there's been multiple studies and reports out that Central Ohio ends up at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, let's get to the commuter rail. I remember covering the commuter rail hearings. Yeah. This must have been 6-7 years ago. And the people who were there were passionate supporters of commuter rail. They really wanted it. They were passionate supporters of mass transit. But it was basically the choir that was sitting in that those audience rooms. Yeah. Now, with gas at $4 a gallon, with buses that have to go by because they are full and it'd be a safety hazard to rise them, what would those, Chester, what would those public hearings look like now if we were to have those commuter rail hearings again?
Mary Ellen has been talking about this, and I think it's very true. We have to go talk to the folks who are not in those hearings, Mike. Mm-hmm. We have to go talk to the public at large. We have to go talk to that individual family that's now taking, instead of $50 a week, they're taking $120 a week out of their budget to be able to pay for how to commute to work. Or they're trying to figure out how to do it in one car. They're trying to figure out, you know, how to make sure they're able to afford the higher utility bills at their house. And so we really have to think about this from economic terms. We have to think about it in the long-term viability terms. And so I think today would be a different conversation. A year ago, the national average gas cost was $2.96. Today is $4.11. No one believes it's going to be $2 again. No one does. And so we built a system based upon Jeep Cass. And so we have to think about, what does that mean as we move forward? And so we have to do the short-term things. We have to do the midterm things. We have to do the long-term things. It's like a three-legged stool. If one of those legs are not there, the stool doesn't set up. So we have to do all three. We have to do the short-term stuff that Bill's talking about. We have to do the midterm things that are going to be critically important to us as we think about the investments we need to make in the short term. But we also need to think long-term, 20 years from now. What is our regional vision for Central Ohio? What do we want it to be? And then how do we build it?
There was some federal money. There was quite a bit of federal money when we were talking streetcars back in the early 2000s. Is that federal money still around?
Actually, we should. You know, we're sitting here with two wonderful experts, and I can talk in little perspectives from the government. But I think we need to let Bill talk about what happened there.
Yeah.
We were looking to qualify for federal dollars, and ultimately, the plan that we had would not qualify. And what we really need in Washington is a more fair and equitable way to qualify for federal dollars. We need partnership in Washington.
And that's happening, and that's coming.
It is happening.
That is happening and coming.
Mike, if I could maybe put some metrics around to put this in perspective. In 1946, in Central Ohio, there were 80 million boardings of public transit. Last year, there were just under 15 million boardings. From 1946 to 2008, our population has probably doubled. Our geography has certainly doubled.
There was only one lane on the Outer Belt back then, wasn't there?
if there was even an Outer Belt then. To me, it shows that the pent-up demand is there, and you can't serve that many boardings with a single mode.
Yeah.
There's got to be multiple modes. That's why we've got to look at fixed guideway systems, biking, as Chester said, the whole multimodal system. Relative to the light rail project that ran up north, up into the Crosswoods area near Worthington, was dependent on 50% federal funding, 25% state funding, and 25% local funding. We could not at that time get the local match. As we prolonged the process, the cost escalated. The federal funding declined, and the way they allocated the scarce federal funding is they raised the standards. Mm-hmm. So we did not meet the criteria to move forward in the FTA process, and that's when our board, about a year and a half ago now, maybe 2 years now, elected to shelve that project.
How much was gas at that point?
But back it was probably $2 a gallon.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what it comes to. It's really, when you come down to it, it's really kind of simple economics. I mean,
it is.
You'd have an easier sell if gas was $4 a gallon back then. I think you might. Would you agree that you'd get the perhaps 25% local funding match with either a tax increase or some kind of government support?
We'd have the people demanding it, as they're demanding it now. They're demanding options. They're demanding some kind of way to get around.
And also, Mike, if you go look, and that was probably 1999 timeframe, 2000 timeframe, that conversation went on. Look what's happened around the country since then. Look at the Charlotte, North Carolinas, and the Memphis, Tennessees, and the Little Rock, Arkansas, and the Salt Lake Cities, and the San Diegos, and the Sacramentos. Look what they've done. The Dallases, look what they have done, and the investments they have made, and the systems they built in the 4 or 5 years since then. And think about where Columbus, Ohio is, and think about what we want our future to be, and we want to attract the best and brightest. This is about workforce. This is about economics. This is about creating jobs and opportunities for the future. And the investments we need to make in our infrastructure. And a piece of that is our transportation infrastructure. We've built a great roadway system, but that's a piece of it. And what we need now to invest in and think about is the rest of the system as a network. And we need to think about those other investments we need to make. And we need to think about it in an investment. And it just can't be the public sector. We also have to think about the private sector. How do we bring the business community to the table? How do we bring public-private partnerships to the table? And also, I think the conversation at the federal level is going to change dramatically, right, without a doubt. And it's a great opportunity for us.
There are a lot of people who support commuter rail and buses and integrated transportation. But there are a lot of people who say, you know what? My neighbor the other day told me, I'm a car guy. I like getting in my car and going down the street and coming and going as I please. He works in a suburban office park, free parking. It's not that far from his house.
He could bike.
He could, and he feels guilty that he doesn't bike.
Okay, well, it'll
but
change.
He freely admits that I'm a car guy, and there are a lot of car guys and car gals in this area.
And I believe that's going to change. I think, as I've said before, we're at a teachable moment here as people are really feeling the pinch. Hundreds more dollars than they really budgeted is going into their car. It's not that they're going to just abandon their car. What we want to give them is options. A couple times a week, every time you leave the car at home for a trip, and remember, most of the trips that we take are 2 miles or less. Every time you leave the car home, you're saving gas. And if you're saving gas, you're saving those extra dollars, and you're also, helping our environment. Today we've got an air quality issue today.
Right.
You're alleviating congestion. Most of our 2 miles or less. Consider that. Now I've got, luckily, we're continuing our discussion about mass transportation down at City Hall and tonight in City Council chambers. Following on the heels of Bill Loda is Chester and Company from Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission to talk about the highway costs of growth in the larger terms and what it has meant to Central Ohio. Also to talk about what the future might hold if we do invest in a balanced transportation system, how transit-oriented development might look here in our region. And, we're going to have an opportunity to talk a little bit about the fact that our ability to get cheap oil is dwindling, and how we must, if we're not serving our people adequately, if we're not looking at ways to give them alternatives.
You know, Mike, Chester and I serve on the Ohio Department of Transportation's 21st Century Transportation Priority Task Force, and it's a task force, multidimensional, that's looking at all the modes of transportation and what should the vision be for ODOT going forward. And we recently had 7 public meetings across the state. I know we were in Dayton and Athens and St. Clairsville and
Akron.
Cleveland and Akron and Columbus. And Toledo. I was able to attend 4 and read the summaries of all 7. Overwhelmingly, the public was demanding more mass transportation. I was quite surprised at the commitment or the desire to get alternate modes to the automobile. Now, as Mary Ellen said, there's always going to be cars.
Yeah.
I mean, people will have cars if they want to take long trips. They will have cars. But I think more and more people are looking at alternatives to paying $4.10 a gallon for gasoline, paying a parking fee, maintenance on their vehicle, 5 days a week to get back and forth to work.
292-8513. 292-8513 is the number to call. We're talking mass transit with Chester Jordan, the executive director of MORPC, Bill Loda, the executive director of COTA, and city council member Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy. We'll take a quick break. We're right back after this brief break for messages on Open Line on here on WOSU.
On the next Fresh Air, how Wall Street caused the mortgage and credit crisis. We talk with Paul Mallow, author of Chain of Blame. Also, the mortgage crisis's lesser known victims, pets. We talk with Stephanie Shane of the Humane Society. She rescued 2 dogs who were given up for adoption due to foreclosures. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air will be here later this afternoon starting at 1 o'clock, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. It is 79 degrees at 10:30. Your membership with WOSU provides for the news and information you rely on. And in this pivotal election year, your support is more important than ever. Becoming a member is easy when you go online to wosu.org/give. Thank you for your continued support of WOSU 820, NPR News. On your drive home, catch up on the day's events and business news with All Things Considered and Marketplace. Now on WOSU 89.7 FM, weekdays from 4 until 7 o'clock. And in the weather forecast for today, partly sunny this morning and then cloudy this afternoon. There is a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 3, and a high of 88. Rain likely tonight, maybe a thunderstorm, cloudy and a low of 69. And now, back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line. I'm Mike Thompson, filling in for Fred Anderle today. We are talking mass transit, planes, trains, and automobiles, so to speak, with Chester Jordan, the director of MORPC, Bill Loda, who runs the Central Ohio Transit Authority, and Columbus City Council member Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy. We have an email. If you'd like to email us, you can send them to openline@wosu.org. An email from Rick. I'll just throw this out to the panel, whoever wants to answer it. I guess, Bill, you might be the first one to take a stab at this. Rick writes, whenever I get onto 670 from 71, I see a huge parking lot filled with school buses standing empty. COTA and the Columbus Public Schools seem to be running two parallel mass transit systems with little or no coordination between them. What would it take to integrate these two systems? Wouldn't this help alleviate the bus shortage mentioned earlier in the show?
Mike, that's a very, very interesting question, and we do carry a significant number of Columbus Public School children now, the high school children. The superintendent of schools, Gene Harris, has responsibility for the kindergarten children almost from door to door. Secondly, the buses, Columbus Public School buses, generally are not equipped from a handicap standpoint. It takes a different certificate on the driver's license. So there's a lot of hurdles, particularly from the Federal Transit Administration, on transporting school children.
Plus, every time you stop, we have to stop, right, if you use school buses?
I don't know about that. Obviously not, because the emailer is very perceptive, and it's a question we constantly look at. But we do have a special contract or a special arrangement with Columbus Public Schools to carry a lot of their high school children back and forth to school. I also should comment that the constraint in expanding COTA bus service is not the bus itself. It's really the operator. We are seeking operators. We need to hire about 100 operators a year to meet expansion, attrition, our turnover. We have two full-time recruiters that do nothing but seek to hire operators. So if any of your listeners are interested in being a COTA bus operator, just call 275-5800.
Job opening. That's a news item right there.
There you go.
On that same line as the emailer, interestingly, I had a teacher just in the past couple weeks. We were having a conversation, and she said, "You know, I wonder whether the city schools transportation system has ever thought of picking up teachers and having them be monitors on the bus, which would certainly alleviate their transportation issues, give the schools an opportunity
That's
to have
a
monitor on the bus, and make it easier all the way along the line there, you know, as an option for teachers to see if they were on a bus line for the schools to
be picked
up. They
asked the kids how they felt about that idea.
They could start their lessons early, right?
That's right.
Mike, reference to that, MORPC is just in the process of wrapping up a study. We've done working with the Regional Education Service Center in the state, Representative Flowers, looking at school bus service throughout Franklin County and how can we do a better job of integrating and coordinating all our school bus service throughout all school districts within the region. And I think that's another opportunity for us to talk about how do we use scarce resources in a more effective way.
292-8513, 292-8513, the phone number to call if you'd like to join in our conversation. Also, we'll take your emails at openline@wosu.org. We touched on the streetcar plan earlier, Mary Ellen. $108 million, give or take. The line would be 2.5 to 3 miles up High Street from downtown towards the OSU campus. The main concern there, I think, on the part of skeptics is that it's a great first step for public transportation, but they're wondering if that's too high a price to pay for something which many people view as a novelty.
Right, and it certainly isn't a novelty. That people need to start seeing this as the first line in a system, a streetcar system that is integrated with the bus system, that is integrated with a future light rail system. That line, that High Street line, was chosen because of the density. It goes to the densest neighborhoods that we have. It has an opportunity to be a real pedestrian circulator, which is how streetcars function. And there's a lot of unknowns there. That's why, you know, I'm pushing to get the dollars in place to get this thing engineered so that we can answer a lot of questions as to, you know, where it would run and how it would interface with traffic, where it may turn around at OSU. What I hear more and more from people is that they want it in their neighborhoods. And why are you choosing High Street over my neighborhood? Well, there is a distinct reason. The university area is the most densely populated neighborhood in our city. And just coming right down High Street, and that really is sort of natural transit-oriented development. And we're going to try to put the starter streetcar line there so that we can have instant success and possibly get to the point where we can start building out, east and west lines and other lines.
That's another question. When we talked about commuter rail back in the early 2000s and the streetcar, they're always north and south. Right. Why not start east-west?
Well, I know one of the big problems that we've got with the potential streetcar line going east and west is that the bridges over the rivers are not equipped to handle handle the weight.
Okay. So logistical concern.
We have a logistical concern. The other thing, you know, it can't go further south because the 70-71 rebuild, although it is delayed because of funding issues with ODOT, it's going to happen in some way, shape, or form. Doesn't stand to reason to pay the dollars to extend that down South High Street if we're going to have to rip it up in just a few years.
Also, Mike, to get FTA funding, they rank the projects.
Federal government funding.
Federal Transit Administration ranks the projects nationally. And the number one criteria, one of the prime criteria they look at is ridership. Secondly is savings in time. So you look for a route that has the most, the largest ridership, the most dense catchment area. And if you look at a map of Central Ohio, as Mary Ellen said, it's High Street. So that's why when COTA looked at the first light rail project, they looked at where can we get the most ridership, where can we save the most time, and that's the North Corridor.
How much of it is you need to get suburban support, outlying area support to spend the dollars for this.
Oh, it's critical.
And is that part of the reason why they go north-south?
But Mike, I think that goes back to the heart of the conversation. As you know, MORPC is a strong supporter of the streetcar. We're so strong supporter, we've committed $20 million of our resources to building the system. And the reason we were supportive of that, and we said this from day one, that has to be a platform or a launching pad for a broader conversation about
Absolutely.
Mass transit in Central Ohio. What we've done a very poor job, in my mind, is talking about that regional vision.
That's right.
Folks have not seen the connectivity between the streetcar and what else happens next.
Right.
We've talked about, well, maybe it does this or maybe it does that. Well, we need to paint the big picture. Let's paint the big vision, and then we can really go out and sell light rail, commuter rail, intercity rail, streetcar, bikes, COTA bus services, all that as an integrated package. But what we've not done is sold that integrated package.
Okay, let's go to our phone lines. Henry, you have a question for our panel. Go ahead, Henry.
Okay. First, I use the bus frequently. I'm glad I lived in a city. We chose our house because it was near a bus system.
Transit-oriented development.
The other thing I'd like to say is there's no way to get from county seat to county seat in Ohio because there are no buses that run from county seat to county seat. But I have a question, and the question is, if a light rail system is put on High Street, how will that affect traffic? Where will the islands be where people can board the bus? How will it avoid causing causing problems for cars that go up and down High Street?
Good questions.
I'll start, and I know that Bill and Chester want to comment as well. This is exactly why the mayor has requested $200,000 to continue the exploration of this beginning streetcar line down High Street. I've asked for $50,000 of that to do some pre-engineering, to look at exactly what you're talking about. But we really need the full engineering to answer these questions fully. We don't know exactly the answers to that. We can kind of surmise. We can see what's been done in other cities. The modern streetcar runs nearly flush to the pavement and oftentimes goes to an island either in the center or on either side of the street, thereby preserving on-street parking. They do interface with buses and pedestrians and other cars safely, but how that relates to our High Street, we don't yet know. So we're hoping that at least getting some pre-engineering answers to those questions may be helpful for you, Henry, and others that are asking the same question.
One concern I've had is what I've heard is the lines, the overhead lines, in particular in the Short North, where you have the arches there.
Right.
How
does asked
that
question.
Fit together,
yeah. We asked that question when we were first exploring on the streetcar working group, and it was answered satisfactorily for me. Bill or Chester, I don't exactly remember particulars, but they believed that it was a good infrastructure to put it up. Of course, many of us remember the old lines and how unsightly they were for the electric buses that were on a fixed guideway. But this, I've seen pictures of how it's been done in other areas, and they believe that it works just fine with
the
arches.
Yeah. Yeah. Mary Ellen's right. You need to do the engineering. Henry raises a good question. But if you look at other cities that have light rail systems, have streetcar systems, the one that COTA was designing was compatible with the traffic on the public streets.
Okay.
That his county seat to county seat question. I don't know who wants to get it. Both of you want to get into that.
Well, that is an excellent question.
Yes.
And again, we've got to think out of the box. Somebody said think like there's not even any box. But currently, today, COTA is the Central Ohio Transit Authority. We are funded by a tax base that's collected in Franklin County and the cities where the cities go outside of Franklin County. And that's our franchise service area. So we cannot run service county seat to county seat. But those are the kind of things that I feel fairly confident will come out of this 21st century Transportation Priorities Task Force of how do we reach beyond our traditional borders to provide transportation where people want to go.
And that's a critical point, Mike, as we think about Central Ohio. Central Ohio is more than just Franklin County. Mm-hmm. And we think about the population growth, about 1.1 million or so in COTA's current service area. But if you look at Central Ohio, it's 2 million individuals within our footprint. And we think about Delaware. We have to think about Marysville. We think about Fairfield and Pickaway County. We think about Rickenbacker and where the growth is going on the Pickaway County side and how we make those connections. And we are tied and bind together. Our success, our history, and our future is tied and bind together as a region. We need to have a system that does that and makes those connections for us and helps us grow in the way we need to grow in the future.
You know, I hate to say what's old is new again, but I'm going to say it. We had an interurban line that was exceedingly successful 100 years ago that used to get people all around the region. And, of course, there's this an old story in my family about how my great-grandfather was playing cards out at Buckeye Lake, drinking and playing cards with his friends, and there was a water main break down in downtown Columbus. And he got on the interurban and had a couple guys help him step off because he had the map in his head of the water line, and he stepped off and said, "Digger here, boys," got back on the interurban and finished his card game. Now, we can't do that now, can we? That was 100 years ago. So I guess I'm bringing this up because I believe that some of these intra-city lines within Central Ohio, those rail beds still exist in some ways. And one of the things that MORPC has done and others have done is try to monitor where those lines are to make sure that most of them aren't getting built over so we have an option to go forward with that type of transit.
Okay, let's get off the bus for a moment and get on the bike. Corey, you're on the air with our panel on Open Line.
Hello. I am a cyclist. My wife rides her bike daily, rain, shine, snow, whatever, to work. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how your organizations could sort of integrate a bike path or many bike paths in Columbus and surrounding areas.
Chester, you've talked about that. How do we do it? How do we come up with this great plan?
Well, there is a Central Ohio, a regional greenways plan that we do have, talking about building our infrastructure related to our bike system. The city of Columbus has a very aggressive, and Marilyn can talk about that, very aggressive bike plan. It's also integrated in our 2012 commission report and some of the things they're talking about there. You know, we have a lot of great north-south routes. What we have to build is east-west. We have to build those bridges across the river, if you will. We just opened up a great bridge just recently on 315.
Beautiful.
A beautiful structure that connected the neighborhoods on one side to where the path was on the other side of the river. And so there's opportunities to do that. We've made the investments, but we need to step it up, if you will.
Right.
We need to step up with those investments at an exponential rate. But we also need, when we do that, we also have to think about that not just as a bike system, but again, as a regional integrated mass transit system and how it fits together. We can't think about, well, we're going to do COTA here, we're going to do bike here, we want to do this here. We have to think about it all together.
So you need to basically link the Olentangy bike trail to a lot or a place where you can park your bike and get on the bus.
That's correct.
Right. Maybe a place where you can take a shower.
You take your bus on the or bike on the bus. You know?
I think that's a great point about being able to park your facility, have a facility where you can take a shower, where you can change clothes, where you can have sort of a transit or a design kind of facility where it is integrates buses with light rail, with bikes, with pedestrian, with retail, with restaurants. So think about what that could be and think about what that would mean for this region and for this city and for these communities.
Certainly that's our vision, and bike paths are an important part of it. You know, I have to point to our Bicentennial Bikeways Plan that we just about a month ago adopted, Columbus City Council did. We've got a lot of work to do there. There's some stuff that's going to be ramped up and moved along very rapidly because of the need and the demand. It's important, Corey, you mentioned that you're using your bikes not just for recreation, but this is as an essential form of transportation. In previous years, you know, oftentimes transportation engineers would think of bikes as a recreational vehicle. So that's, I think, why they focused primarily on bike paths. But what we need to do, and if you look at Alta Planning, the bike transportation experts that we hired to do the Bicentennial Bikeways Plan, they are looking at integrating safe cycling on the roads with the bike paths, as you know, making sure that the connectors use our current roadway system, and that education is certainly part of it. We have to make sure that people understand that bikes are vehicles. They are slow-moving vehicles, but vehicles, and we need to make sure that motorists respect their placement on the roadways. And so, I wish you safe biking, and we'll be looking for more pathways as well as more complete streets that integrate all these forms of transportation.
I think that's very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Corey. Mary Ellen, while on the issue of bikes, the safety ordinance has been tabled that would require helmets for kids, and also it would lift the ban on bikes on the sidewalks. As a runner more often recently, I don't want the bikes on the sidewalks.
Right.
Where does that stand now, the ordinance?
Well, the ordinance is going to the Transportation and Pedestrian Commission for review, and there will be discussion there regarding it. You know, I am supportive of requiring helmets on children, and that's exactly what I understood the intent of the ordinance was. Mm-hmm. I was surprised the week before it was introduced for first reading to find that there were changes in bike operations code that I knew that our transportation engineers were firmly against. For safety reasons.
Yeah, it's not safe to have the bikes.
It is not safe for pedestrians. It's not safe for the bicyclist either. And transportation engineers have done many, many studies that support that. If a bike wants to be on the sidewalk, it's very easy to get up on the sidewalk and walk your bike. But if you are using bike as transportation, and you need to make sure that you're on the roadway and operating as a vehicle.
And Mike, this goes back to something Mary Ellen had said earlier about the concept of complete streets, to make sure that as we're reinventing our streets or rebuilding new streets or building new infrastructure, that we think about this concept of a multimodal. and that we make sure we build into that built infrastructure the options and the opportunities for all modes of transportation to use the system.
This all comes down to money. I mean, it really does.
Absolutely.
I mean, how much more expensive is this going to cost to do this? And how do you – we have an email from Andrew asking how the average citizen can get involved in this. How do you convince the average citizen who's not a big fan of mass transit, not a big fan of bikeways, to buy into this and to support government spending of this nature?
Last night, I just passed two pieces of legislation resurfacing streets, millions and millions of dollars. I think it was a total of around $4 million, two pieces. Every year, we have to take care of our roadways. That's not going to end. But what you're going to see is more of a balance here. People have to start thinking of mass transportation as essential infrastructure akin to roadways. No, people all ask, it's costing so much to build out this first line of streetcar, but nobody ever asks about what it costs to build a road. And the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission has done these studies. The highway costs of growth, if we continue growing the way we are in the billions upon billions of dollars. As a matter of fact, we can't meet those needs. But what we needed, if we have a balanced transportation system that looks at transit-oriented development patterns, once we get this system, you're going to see development patterns follow these. You've seen it in other cities. That's what's going to happen. People, just like Henry earlier said, you know, we bought our house close to where we could catch the bus. That's, you're going to see more and more of that, and we want to make sure we as a government are offering people these options.
Chester Jordan of MORPC, the Ohio Rail Commission says it costs 20 times more to lay a mile of asphalt.
There you go.
Than it does to put a mile of rail.
Right.
But if you looked at a commuter cost per mile. At this point, it's still cheaper
per capita, right,
for the roadway. But you have to convince folks to take the train.
But and I guess I would argue with the assumption that there's a lot of folks out there that are opposed to mass transit. I don't believe that's the case, Mike. I think that we've just not talked about it in those terms. Right. Folks love to bike.
Right.
They love to walk. I mean, they love to be able to take the bus and do those sort of things. We've just not provided the options, and so we have to think about it in a balanced system. Between now and 2030, we're going to spend $15 billion. On our system here in Central Ohio.
That's roadways.
With a B. B with a B. Now think about that. So it's not that the resource is not there. It's just that maybe we've not spent the resources in the most efficient and effective way possible for our future. And so we have to think about what that is. We're talking about reengineering 70-71, the split issue there. I mean, we're close to $1.5 billion just to fix an engineering issue, a safety issue, which is critically important. But if we begin to think about it, well, how do we integrate the systems? And so maybe instead of spending $1.5 billion, maybe spend half that money and right. put it on a rail system or a bus rapid transit system or a hot lane system integrated with that rebuild goes. So there's lots of options, lots of opportunities. Also, Bill talked about what's happening at the state level with the priorities task force. I think there's going to be a realignment in Ohio Department of Transportation right. and some of their state resources.
There's
going to be
a
realignment at the federal level. So if we've got our act together, we create a regional vision, then we can take advantage of the state action and that federal action at the same time.
Yeah, I have to say it's very distressing to see us playing catch up on this balanced transportation issue. But being the relentless optimist that I am exceedingly encouraged by this conversation that ODOT has begun on the 21st century. Ohio's transportation system, and it really, as Chester said, this will integrate with new leadership in Washington. That, in other words, your government is going to respond to your outcry for options, for an opportunity to leave that car, you know, in the garage, or maybe even shed one car. You know, there's more cars than people in Franklin County right now. More cars than people. That's kind of a crazy thing to think
of. What are we going to do with all those three-car garages we're building?
There you go. I guess they can make another rumpus room out of it,
more
right?
More lawnmowers. You can put in your garage.
Yeah. Mike, I would say if people are interested in what's happening with that priorities task force, if they just go to ODOT's webpage, mm-hmm. there's links there that they can get all the material.
It's a priority now, let's face it, because gas is $4 a gallon. What happens if gas drops maybe not to $2 a gallon, but to $2.50, $2.80, even $3 a gallon? Does the enthusiasm for mass transit fade and then we go back to the same old thing?
You know, Mike, if you look back in the 70s, our gas issue then was political. I think today it's more systemic. It's can we pump enough? Can we pump more?
Right.
Gas is clearly going to fluctuate. It probably will go down after the summer's over. It'll go down slightly. But in the long run, it's only going to go up. It's right. going to become more scarce. And it's kind of like back when we were running out of whale oil for yep. lighting lights. Right. I mean, it's a finite resource. It's scarce. It's eventually going to continue to go up, and we've got to seek alternative ways. And I hope that Central Ohio recognizes that this is a moment in time. We've got to make some bold decisions.
Yes.
We've got to step out so that we're not sitting around this radio station mm-hmm. 10 years from now.
Having the same conversation
when gasoline is $8 a gallon or 10 or 12, or we don't even have gasoline.
The population's going to demand this.
And, Mike, I think one of the big differences between now and the 70s is what's happening in the world. We are tied and bind together with what's happening in the world economy. What's happening in China, what's happening in Dubai, what's happening in India affects us here in Columbus, Ohio. And you've got 300 million individuals in China now becoming the middle class. That's almost the entire population of the United States. Same thing's happening in India. Same thing's happening around the world. And so there's a greater demand on that limited supply that right. Bill's talking about. And so just economics 101 tells you that with scarce resource, with greater demand, less supply, prices are going to go up.
The automakers see these rising right. gas prices, and they are making changes
right.
as well. And
right.
you're the competition with the automaker and the people who want to drive their car is not going to end.
Well, we welcome that. I think it's a great response. It's a great response to an absolute need. And I want to point out that a peak oil expert, Dr. Seppo Korpela from Ohio State University, is going to be joining us tonight, joining the conversation with Chester Jordan and others regarding this larger picture about the fact that oil's going to be there. It's just going to be more difficult, more expensive to get at. And we have to change our living patterns to make it happen. And that does include more fuel-efficient cars. As we've all Sorry. Said, we're not here saying the car's got to go away. We're saying that we have to start looking for options so that people have an they don't feel trapped in their car, that it's the only way they can get around.
Mike, let me talk about this for just a second. This is a great, I think, segue as we talk about government policy and we think about what that means. We've created a highway system, a transportation system that we fund through the gas tax. So when you and I go at the pump, we fill up.
Yep.
That money goes into a trust fund at the state level and goes to a trust fund federally. Vehicle miles traveled, the amount you and I drive, has dropped dramatically in March and April. The greatest drop we'd seen in our history in March, except for when April came, we see the next greatest drop.
Wow.
So that means there's less tax money going into the highway trust fund, which means there's less money to build road systems. And so all these things are coming together, and kind of as Bill was saying, as a perfect time in history. And we have this window. If we're willing to step through that window and create the vision of our future, then it can be a very exciting, it can be a great, very opportunity for this region, for this city, and for this community. If we choose not to do that, then our kids and grandkids will have to deal with this issue when their time comes.
Right.
Just a couple of minutes left. Bill, the short term is all of these projects take time, the light rail, streetcar,
right.
integrated system. In the short term, the next year or so, the bus is the best option. What in the next year or so can people expect to see as far as what CODA is going to do for crosstown routes and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Mike, that in the short run, we've got to focus on the bus, the fixed route bus. In CODA, fortunately, has the resources to expand our system. We are expanding at 20,000 hours per trimester. We change routes three times a year. It's our plan to add 20,000 hours. It's our plan to look at the crowded routes, look at later service. If you work the second shift
Real
downtown,
mm-hmm.
you can't get home on a bus. We've got to look at going where we're not going. We're looking currently at going to Rickenbacker. We're looking currently going to the new hospital in Dublin. We do have crosstown. We do have crosstown
routes.
There's
a Bethel route, right? Like crosstown.
Dublin
Bethel.
Just signed on to CODA.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
was
yeah, Dublin,
which is
Dublin
a
just,
big move.
In April, became a signature to the CODA agreement, so we can serve the entire city of Dublin now, not just where it's in Franklin County. So CODA is prepared to step up in the short run to do what we can do, but we can't get complacent. We've got to address, as Chester and yeah. Mary Ellen are saying, we've got to adopt a broader community vision of what's our transportation network going to look like in the future.
Okay. Thanks very much. We could talk about this for another hour.
Yeah, right.
But thanks to our panel, Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy from the Columbus City Council, Bill Loda, who runs the Central Ohio Transit Authority, and Chester Jordan, who directs the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. or MORPC. Thanks very much to you all for joining us.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you.
Up in our next hour, we talk about Toyota and sweatshops and allegations of misdeeds on the part of the automaker. That's on Open Line coming up on WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the line at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.